Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
You are listening to Mist Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Mist Apex Podcast, brought to you by sportsbookreview.com, helping bettors become better since 1999. Today's episode is called, If You No Longer Go for the Gap, then you have sensibly decided that the move was unlikely to result in a clean pass. I'm your host, Richard Spanners Ready, and I'm joined by Matt Trumpets. How's it going there, Matt?
Oh, I was working right up until the time we went live, so my head is gradually catching up with the rest of my body here. How are you doing?
See, I'm so relaxed right now. I've just had one of those life-affirming weekends where, you know, just enough beer, just enough friends, maybe a bit too much family, and, you know, just a bit of fun and karaoke. Since you ask, it was Shakira, and I nailed it.
Wow. I don't know what to say to that, actually. You have left me speechless for the first time ever.
Okay, this week, Matt, we review the mayhem in Monaco. No, that's not a good headline at all. The better headline for this weekend is Ferrari destroy Mercedes in Monaco. They absolutely bossed the title fight.
Yeah, they kind of did. But in doing so, they gave us oh so much to talk about.
Yeah, they did. I mean, we always brace for a bit of a procession in Monaco, and boy, did we get one. But that doesn't mean there's not talking points.
No, and in fact, we could probably spend the entire show just arguing about exactly what Ferrari was up to with their pit stops, never mind anything else.
At least we did get a little bit of action at the end, and I think we've got four whose fault is this is, which always makes me happy. And I think we've seen the biggest U-turn in F1 racing rules ever.
I know you were all being crazy about that, but I'm going to slightly put my foot in the other camp and say, I think they're being modestly consistent because, well, anyway, we can talk about that later.
And we will. So a warm welcome to our new subscribers who joined the feed after Joe Saywood decided to bring Inside F1 with Joe Saywood to this feed. And I'll be catching up with Joe again, in fact, tomorrow. And I think we're going to release that episode on Thursday. Tonight's show is a review of the Monaco GP. Me and Matt do race reviews. Next Sunday, Matt and Chris will do a roundup of the news. Because I'm not here, I am on holiday. And before the Canadian Grand Prix, you'll get a short, sharp betting preview that we do with our friends over at Sportsbook Review. We also occasionally have a tech focus show with Matthew Summerfield of motorsport.com. I'm not going to be humble here. That is simply the best F1 tech chat discussion anywhere. So if you only came here for Joe, I hope we can give you much more and enhance your F1 fandom. But in the meantime, let me tell you that we are an independent podcast hosted by MistApexPodcast.com. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute or a Tuesday on a bank holiday. We might be wrong, but we're first. This show is safe for work. We're keeping it clean here so you can play it with kids in the background or at work. We are joined this week by Autosport journalist Chris Rainbow Sparkle Stevens.
What's going on, man?
That's all right. Did you feel a bit, you know, left out because you did the Monaco E-Prix? You did the baby brother, but then you had to be sat at home while the yachts all pulled in for the Monaco GP.
No, not at all. Just being in Monaco, even when there's not a race on, is special in itself.
And we're also joined by Downforce Radio's host of Raise the Roof, Tin Top Enthusiast, Goldie, Alex Goldschmidt. How's it going, Goldie?
Evening, Spanners. Evening, everybody. All good. Thank you very much.
You're going to join us for a bit of open wheels, so it's going to be a bit disconcerting for you that these cars can't touch, and what happens when they do?
Well, I've had my fair share of both open wheel and tin top action this weekend, I can guarantee you that, mate.
I wonder what the big dirty news is this week.
Big dirty news.
Well, here's where I normally say the big dirty news was the race, but I suppose big dirty news was kind of the qualifying this week, Matt.
Yeah, only in the sense that if you're going to talk about qualifying, it was the extraordinarily bad luck that one Mr. Lewis Hamilton had, although we can argue about exactly what caused that, aside from, of course, Stoffel.
A Pirelli conspiracy. That's what I'm betting on right now.
You can absolutely bet on that. But really, it was a weekend Mercedes would rather have not had. And it was most obvious in the fact that they just could not get the tires up to temperature. And this is where I can see you've already, like, I can see your eyes glazing over because I mentioned the word tires. But the fact of the matter is, all of the drivers had a hard time getting both the fronts and the rears into the window at the same time. And most of the problems that Mercedes were suffering were due directly to that. It was so bad. Known non-complainer Romain Grosjean actually had an entire article written about him by Jonathan Noble about the tires being ridiculous. And we know he never complains about anything ever.
Didn't he? That was his second complaint of that day. He'd also extensively complained about the sausage curb.
Yeah. He complained about that. A lot of drivers complained about that. But miraculously, they all managed to miss it in the race as well. So
fair enough. And look, let's talk about the race, because I took a bit of heat in the build up to the race. And some people love Monaco, Matt, and I get that. But I just want to quickly review what I actually said. I said there's no racing. And to be fair, in my defense, there's really not. In fact, the stewards have now clamped down on any potential racing you could have had. As I will correctly argue with you later, Matt. But also I said in a tweet, it might be all fine and well for like the media and the people there. I may have used the word elite in a lefty rant sense. But for them, it's really, really exciting. But to sit and watch it on TV, it's fairly boring. And I think Jack Nicholls responded to it because I used the hashtag BBCF1. And he said, yeah, you're wrong. You know, you have to be here to appreciate it. And yeah, and I think that sums it up. Being there on the BBC dime, Matt, I'm sure he's having a wonderful time.
Yeah, I'm sure he is. And I'm sure I would, if I got an all expense paid trip to Monaco to watch the show, I'm sure it would be fantastic. But you're right, only in the sense that it doesn't translate well as spectacle on television. But I must disagree. I think there was tons of racing.
Okay, I think we could have made that argument in some tracks. But okay, going to be hard pushed to say there was a lot of great racing. There was a few laps around the pit stop that were great racing.
Whoa. See, you do this all the time. You play back right now and point to me where I use the word great in front of racing. I just said there was lots of racing. There were 78 laps of racing.
Well, you misunderstood, Matt. It's much easier to defeat the version of, you know, a much softer version of what the person said than the actual argument. And I think that is kind of what I got with this Monaco thing. I got lots of tweets from Trackside saying, huh, you say it's rubbish, but check this out. Yeah, well, you're there. That's amazing. Not everyone can get there. Certainly not all kids can get there. So just to review what I didn't say it's an easy track. I didn't say it's rubbish to go there. And I didn't say that it's not a challenge. It's just that on telly, it's a bit lame. But hey, if you want to prove me wrong, invite me there, all expenses paid, and show me what an idiot I am. That'll teach me.
I cannot understand this whole argument about it being, you know, too expensive anymore. I mean, having, you know, done it and done it basically on the cheap as well. You know, it is still something that is accessible.
For an F1 weekend, Chris? People.
Sorry?
For an F1 weekend.
Okay, but yeah, it wasn't for the F1 weekend. Oh, yeah, fair enough. They'll bump the prices up a little bit for that. But, we still went during, you know, a period of racing action, and you can do it on the cheap.
Yeah, fair enough. But, you know, personally for me, get the little violins out. As a child from 0 to 18, there was zero chance of me getting to a Monaco GP and traveling around the world. And there are a lot of people in that situation. 99% of people will never go to a Monaco GP. And even the people who do go will still watch most of the Monaco GPs on their telly. So surely it's important for the on the telly bit to be, you know, to be fun to watch. And it's not.
I agree that sort of on TV, it's not an amazing spectacle. You do have to, you know, be an F1 fan to appreciate the skill of trying to navigate those barriers. But I think, you know, the issue of the cost of going to a Grand Prix is more of a integral issue in Formula One, and is not one that is specific to Monaco.
Kirsty says, nice try, Spanners, trying to get an invite because you think it's boring. I've got to try that. Hey, it's not my first rodeo. RJ Bone says, stop racing at Monaco. It's Monaco, not a race circuit. Heartbreak Ridge, the racing isn't the best, but it's just a pretty place to race. So I guess we're just going to have to. It's not going to change, is it? I just thought I'd have my little whinge. Matt, why don't we move on to more interesting tactical things that you spotted before we even saw the green lights?
Right. Well, we did talk extensively about the tires, didn't we? The deal with the tires was it was taking 2 to 3 laps for most cars to get into the window, to get both tires in the window at the same time. And in particular, it was a problem because some of the cars, in order to get into the window, were having to drive up to 6 seconds slower a lap than cars that were getting there quicker. So it caused a lot of problems. In fact, we heard, I believe it was Magnussen complaining about Lewis blocking him on his lap, trying to get his tires up. But we also had an issue with Mercedes, in particular with Lewis, trying to get his lap time in. And now here's the thing. I went back and looked at his FP3 times. If he had just run the same time as he did in FP3, he would have been P7 in Q3.
Wow.
He would have made it through to Q3. So even with no improvement at all, he could have made the third session. But and Summers made this point in the chat, in the Slack chat, that he thought Mercedes was overthinking it a little bit. Just go out there and drive the car around fast and put a time on the board. Instead, they were all about their precision engineering, and to their detriment, as it kept him from getting a banker in. Yeah, Chris.
I think it's quite difficult to compare the FP3 times with the qualifying times because the track changed so drastically between FP3 and qualifying because the track temperature shot up dramatically, and the times were actually slower by the time we got to qualifying.
All right, so it's very easy. You just go and look at the times on the FIA website, and you can see right away the fastest time in FP3, and then you can see the qualifying times. And I agree, actually. I was tracking this because I've gotten sort of interested in the improvement between FP3 and quali between Ferrari and Mercedes. So I actually have it all on a spreadsheet now. And interestingly, there was virtually no improvement, just a tenth or two in Ferrari. Bottas, and I'll say it again for the chat room bingo people, Bottas actually improved by over half a second between FP3 and quali. So we did see some times go up. But my point being, even if he run simply the same time as FP3, he would have absolutely been in Q3. So the issue is waiting to the last minute. And you actually heard his engineer kind of yell at him when he had the save, but kept on going and then backed off. He was like, you've only got one more bite at this cherry, right before Stoffel put it in the wall.
And that was a big put in the wall as well, if I remember correctly, you know, and he was on his flyer and then instantly comes up against yellow flags. And straight away, you knew that straight away, well, Hamilton's dumped it where he shouldn't have done in terms of putting his, you know, he should have put a banker lap in. So he would have actually been further up into Q2 and to potentially be in the top 10.
Well, okay. Then in the chat room, James Fennell's asking, I still don't understand why they didn't revert to the FP1 setup. Is it as easy as just going, well, let's just reset and start again?
It never is because, I mean, they've got so much in terms of suspension travel, geometry, wing application with regards to the front and the rear wings as well, the vortices they've got to take into consideration. So there's so much these engineers to put in such a short space of time.
But to Matt's point, Forsaken in the chat room, thank goodness we do have a chat room, Matt. I do love these folk that impart us with all the little things we forget. They're saying that to back you up, all the individual times, sector times within quali would have added up to P7 as well. So if there was capability in the car. It's just one of those times, one of those sessions where it doesn't go right. And we've seen Lewis Hamilton and loads of people struggle to get the lap in around Monaco because of yellow flags. So it's not rare. This isn't a one-off situation. Car struggling with setup, driver doesn't get it in the window to get his lap in. It happens.
It does happen, but it happened at a particularly bad track for Mercedes. And really, because as you have pointed out, with the wider tires and the wider cars, what little overtaking we've seen in the past was pretty much ruled out entirely.
And I have to say, I'll skip ahead to the race a little bit. I think we were on lap 12 or 13, and there was so little happening that the commentators on Channel 4 were comparing the width of the Formula One car in relation to a Land Rover Discovery. And I was sitting listening to that, and the commentary was like Test Match Special, if that means anything at all to you, Matt, where they would describe the buses coming down past the ground in between overs. So, yeah, you're right. This year particularly, Jenson Button commented the cars are wide, and that did make for a not very exciting race. But for Kimi fans, and we know we have a lot of them, this was a bumper Saturday.
Yeah, it was. He was fast. He was properly fast. And when it came down to it, and I will point out this is the second week in a row, second race in a row, apologies, that when Vettel had to do the job in Q3 with his final run, he couldn't quite get it across the finish line in time. He couldn't do it in Barcelona, even though he looked to be faster than the Mercedes. And now against his own teammate in Monaco, again, he just couldn't quite get it done. Yeah, Chris.
I think what kind of backs that point up as well is that Seb had the better of Kimi all the way up until that last lap in Q3. Kimi's pace really sort of came out of nowhere, which I think is why it was a surprise to a lot of us, and also really great to see as well.
Oh, it was delightful to see. I was tremendously excited to see Vettel not starting on pole.
Yeah, but haven't we got a situation here with the two number one drivers in the two top teams that these are guys who absolutely go for it in qualifying? They're looking for the perfect lap every lap because they know they can do the perfect lap. Now, maybe Bottas and Kimi aren't sitting there thinking they can do the absolute historic perfect lap. And you just wonder, maybe Lewis and Vettel are the kind of guys who are a bit all or nothing with that perfect lap time.
Yeah, all or nothing at all. Great tune, and it kind of sums up their approach to getting around the track, you know, which in this instance helped neither of them, I think. The only other thing I wanted to mention from qualifying was Carlos Sainz, who properly beat Sergio Perez like a gong by 0.04 of a second. Yeah, Chris.
Can we also mention as well, McLaren did technically have both of their cars in Q3 for the first time this season.
We can mention that, but only because it was like Stoffel said to Rosberg, here, hold my beer.
Was it a Belgian one?
Yes, indeed. You know what else was interesting about that, too, is that Button wound up getting kicked all the way to the back of the grid all over again because they put a new floor on his car. And the reason they did this, and I mentioned this just for those of you who love Formula One trivia, is because they had a new floor and they had exactly two of them. And when Stoffel broke his, putting it in the wall, they gave him Buttons so that he didn't get a back of the grid penalty as well. They only had a spare old spec floor to go with it. Yeah, Chris.
That makes perfect sense. I know it's kind of reminiscent of the whole Weber and Vettel new front wing at Silverstone thing a few years ago, but it makes perfect sense. If your car is, you know, starting in, you know, I think what was 12th place in the end with the penalty, it makes perfect sense to give the better car and the driver that's going to be doing the whole season as well the new floor rather than Jensen.
Oh, no, it made sense because he was already starting at the back. So what's the difference from starting in a pit lane instead? But it was interesting to see ultimately that was what had caused it, because I didn't find that explanation easily. I just ran across it while I was reading about the race. Speaking of the race, shall we go there?
Oh, smooth, dude. Let's catch up with the beautiful little thing in the top right-hand corner of my screen today. Alex Goldschmidt. Goldie, you are the host of Raise the Roof, the newest in the form of Tin Top podcasting that Downforce Radio has to offer. How's that got going this season?
We've had a few technical snags of our own. One of the episodes hasn't been published due to issues at Downforce Radio HQ. Thank you, Mr. Sanson. But it's through no fault of his own.
He ruins everything.
Unlike your technical issues before we went live this afternoon. But yeah, episode 4 is happening this coming Wednesday. So 2 days from now, we're going to be reviewing the action from Thruxton. That's 8 p.m. live for 1 hour on Downforce Radio, the nation's motorsport station. Yeah, it's been going really well so far. We've got a very special guest for this particular episode as well. So yeah, a guy that used to run in the BTCC, but now runs in Ginetta's for all those that follow the Toker Action.
Tell us who it is.
It's Andy Wilmot, who used to run with Welsh Motorsport in the old Protons. Not the most successful driver, but he's been angling to get onto Downforce at some point. So why not put him in?
It doesn't matter.
That he knows well.
Not the most successful driver. He has been in a racing car doing racing car stuff. He knows a lot more than we do. So it's a big score. And at the end of that show as well, you also review the bumper cars from Clacton Pier, is how I hear you wrap up every single show. Goldie, where can people find you and the show on the internet?
Well, you can actually follow us at, there's no Twitter official handle, unlike Lean Angle, which is hosted by a venerable Mr. Stevens.
We'll get to him. This is your moment.
Well, this is my moment, but hey, you know, you've invited me on, so why the hell not? You can find me on Twitter at Alex_G1977. I'm also the Germany editor for touringcars.net, where most of my touring car spiel when it comes to writing is on there. That includes the British Touring Cars, DTM, which I'm a big fan of, the World Touring Cars, which I cover this weekend. You can also find us at Race the Roof on Downforce Radio, so that's all the W's downforceradio.com, and you can find us on Spreaker as well.
Thank you very much. Matthew Graff in the chat room says, is an appearance of Matt's cat included in the live stream bingo? I can tell you that it utterly is. Matt, tell us how the race was won and lost.
I will absolutely do that, but I think we should say hi to some new chat room names first. I see RJ Bone, who I've not seen before. Welcome, welcome. He would like Lee Diffie of the NBC commentary team sacked and Bob Varsha brought back. I happen to be a big Bob Varsha fan, so you got my interest with that one. And also, I have seen another new name, Christian K. Button actually complained these cars had too much grip.
Whoa.
Early going for the comment of the week.
Ooh, but I might be able to add to that as well, because he was talking to, I think it was Lee McKenzie on Channel 4, saying didn't know where the grip was coming from, whether it was going to be on the back or is it going to be on the front. So yeah, the inevitable grip discussion with Mr. Button would have come alive very shortly anyhow.
There's no such thing as too much grip.
Oh, there's always such a thing as too much. And Kwaku Anoma, I've not seen anything quotable in my little window right here, but welcome to the chat room. So, shall we proceed to the race?
Yes, let's not let Alex embarrass himself with his lack of engineering any longer.
Indeed. Right. So, the race was won and lost on the following fact that going into it, the tires, and I just say that to make your eyes glaze over because it's fun, I'll be honest. The tires, the super soft tires, were known to be about a half second slower than the ultra softs. And so everybody was looking for the overcut to be the choice. Normally in Monaco, you'd be pitting around lap 28, but with the ultra soft supposedly lasting forever, nobody really knew what was going to happen. And early on, we did have Hulkenberg retire, but that didn't bring out the safety car. So there was no wrinkle there. And it wasn't until Perez. Oh, yeah. You want to say something? Go ahead.
It was just as soon as the smoke started coming from his car, we're all thinking safety car, safety car, safety car. And then he inconsiderately parked it extremely safely. I'm like, oh, you git. At least just smack it in the middle of the road so we can all have a race. He must have been sitting in his car thinking the one effect I can have on this race right now is to just leave it on the hairpin.
Yeah. And I would have been delighted because I was down for two safety cars in the race in the fantasy league.
And I'd made a drunken bet on Hamilton to win. So I was dying for a safety car.
Yes. No, we were all looking for the safety car, but it did not come out there because Hulkenberg was a responsible Formula One citizen and parked his car well out of the way. But a few laps later, Sergio Perez was called into the pits because his front wing was about to fail. And this is where it got interesting because he strapped on a pair of the super softs and went out and continued to set representative lap times. I.e., he was going well within the half second gap that they thought would be between the two compounds. Now, this was interesting strategically because it opened up the possibility of the undercut working. even if you, because you had to switch from the ultras to the super softs to meet the regulations, which I'm sure everybody knows, but I'll mention it anyway. And so now it was, the race was on overcut or undercut, both seemed possible. And that set the stage for what happened next, which was Ferrari, who had been very fast from the beginning, suddenly started slowing down with Kimi in the lead.
Okay, so what do you think was happening here? Because I was thinking, because the commentary team were talking about where Vettel would come out, and they were like, well, he needs to clear Ricciardo. And then he kept just not getting to the point where he would clear Ricciardo. So I was thinking, well, why? Vettel's not choosing to go that slowly. That's got to be Kimi having a bit of a brain on him and going, hang on a minute, the only way I can keep him behind and prevent my own team giving away this lead is to back him up into the pack and hope he gets the first pit stop and fails his undercut.
Yep, that is certainly a valid interpretation of the facts as we know them. It's a very clever one too, because we don't know, thanks to Ferrari's media blackout, exactly what's going on at Ferrari. We know where their car is finished and we know what their drivers say when they're interviewed. But beyond that, we get nothing but pablum from them right now. And it's a bit of an issue, obviously, because they're in the title fight. But what in all likelihood happened was that, as you might surmise from Ferrari's past history, they might be favoring Vettel with the strategy at the pit stops.
Gasp.
And suddenly, around lap 15 or 16, he starts just running dead 117s. And slowly but surely, back come Bottas, back come Verstappen. And the race was who would get to the undercut window first. And unfortunately for Kimi, Bottas and Mercedes were having actual problems with their pace on those tires. And so it was Verstappen that caught Bottas and got into his undercut window before Bottas caught up and got into Vettel's window. And at that point, Red Bull, who were suddenly thinking, oh, we could undercut Bottas, keep Ricciardo out, and then overcut him as well, was thinking they could get both of their chess pieces ahead in one fell maneuver.
But to me, and I'm an amateur strategist on my home pit wall that I've created for myself, I was thinking that the overcut was always going to be the option for people who were stuck in traffic. And that was somewhat concerned, Chris, by Bono, the engineer at Mercedes, coming over the radio and saying, you know, Lewis, chill out. It's okay. We don't need to go past Kvyat. Our race comes later.
Well, when the news came out that the ultra soft tire was able to do the entire Grand Prix distance, I think it was a fairly safe assumption to say that the overcut was going to be the favored strategy option. But then, of course, you get new data as the race unfolds. You can't predict a race. You can only go on the data that you are given at the time. So I can understand why some teams maybe thought the undercut would work. But definitely Lewis's strategy in going for that overcut, that was definitely the best thing for it.
So maybe you're right. Maybe the overcut was the best strategy. However, as Matt points out, Bottas just couldn't do it. And he set that chain reaction off, which is really, I guess, that made the race.
I suppose if Mercedes were having, you know, those tire issues that Summers tried to point out in the Slack group, that, you know, the more laps they do on those tires, that they're actually overworking them compared to some of the other cars, that would make sense for them.
Yeah, well, what it boiled down to was that Mercedes' car itself was just unsettled. It was a real handful. And so it may not have been specifically tire trouble in the sense that the tires were degrading, but it was tire trouble in the sense that they weren't working properly with the car and the setup. And in particular, because the Mercedes was so softly sprung, the suspicion is that the aero just wasn't working as well around this track as it normally did because the speeds were so low and the car was sprung so soft. Yeah, Chris.
I did definitely notice the amount of roll in the Mercedes compared to some of the other cars, especially through the high-speed swimming pool section. But it's not a new issue of Mercedes having issue on the softest compound available. It's been basically a characteristic of their car since the hybrid era began, that on the super or ultra soft tire, whatever the softest compound is, they don't seem to find as much pace as their rivals.
And they also tend to struggle when the track is very hot, which, as you appropriately pointed out, the temperatures were above 50 on the track for the whole race, which is kind of high. And unlike Ferrari, the lower pressures mandated by Pirelli didn't really help them because they already sprung so softly. It didn't help them in the slightest. Yes, Spanners.
Okay, Matt, you've done a beautiful job laying out the strategy and describing it as moving their chess pieces. Because in Monaco, this is where the strategists probably really earn their money over the drivers. Now, I believe that had all things been equal and you'd have had Kimi and Vettel 1 and 2 coming up to the checkered flag, I don't think Ferrari would have put the call over the radio, simply let him pass. I don't believe we're there yet. However, they were, I'd imagine, looking for any convenient little strategies to make that happen. And what you're saying about the covering off early and the chess piece around Bottas's early pit stop meant that they could legitimately put one of their cars in to cover off the Mercedes in case that happened to be the best strategy. But why did they use the first place car to cover off that tactic instead of using the second place car, which would be more normal?
Well, I suspect it was because Raikkonen was setting the pace, and the pace was well above what they expected it to be. And so we could cast our minds back to perhaps the last race of 2016, when a certain world champion needed to have his teammate finish third so that he could win. Now, what's a world champion to do? Drive as fast as possible and hope his teammate's engine blows up? Or, as we mentioned, perhaps back his teammate into traffic. And do you remember the calls that Hamilton was getting about that? You know, we're going to have to bring you in. We're going to have to change strategy. And he's like,
I suggest
ridiculous. And I think this is what it was. I think Ferrari said, well, Raikkonen's running 117s. We called Vettel and told him to turn his engine up to strat mode 5. And he said, I don't need to. Who do we bring in first?
I missed that. There you go. So they would have been very happy, really, because that gifted them the opportunity to get Vettel in front. And they probably knew that they could release him for a very short amount of laps, and that would be enough to get him out ahead.
Yeah, and crucially, they did bring him in and brought him back out behind Jenson Button, which didn't really help matters much. But I think the real issue is I don't think he knew they were going to bring him in until it was too late for him to do a proper in-lap, because his time before his pit lap was another 1:17. Vettel, on the other hand, his two laps before he came in were both in the 1:15s. And crucially, if you look at the pit stops, Vettel's was the pit stop lap cumulative time in the FIA chart was about 2 seconds faster. Pretty much did it. Yeah.
I mean, Chris, I mean, there's a lot of conspiracy theories, isn't there, where people go, oh, don't be silly. There's no, but this one's nailed on, isn't it?
I'm not going to say.
Oh, you're so bad.
The thing is, I would love to, but the honest answer is I don't know what Ferrari are thinking. I don't think anybody other than Ferrari know what Ferrari are thinking, but I will say it's not exactly unlike Ferrari to do the old switcheroo on their drivers. But the thing, it makes perfect sense as
it
well.
Vettel's
leading the championship. Mm-hmm. They have an opportunity to take a big lead in the drivers and constructors championship with Lewis basically out of the running. Would I like to have seen a fair fight? Absolutely, I would have loved to have. But at the same time, Kimi started dropping the pace. He came out in traffic as well. That was very unfortunate. But at the same time, surely Ferrari should have mapped that out in their strategy. You know, there's a lot of factors in there.
Yeah, Ford the chat room is just confirming that ESPN had an article with Kimi, and he said he was just told to come in, never told to push. So basically, you have two choices to explain what happened in the race. Explanation one, Kimi was slow because Kimi was slow. They brought him in first, Vettel was faster, and Vettel won. Or explanation two, Kimi knew they were going to try or suspected they were going to try something, and he was attempting to do everything he could to win the race, despite them.
Yes, and James Funnell says, look, Kimi could have won the race if he'd have pulled a gap earlier in that race too. It feels like that needs to be mentioned, but he went the other way. He tried to back him up into traffic, perhaps correctly feeling that he doesn't have the pace. But look, there's a difference here. When Ferrari have done it in the past, they've had a number two driver that's bought in to being a number two driver, Massa, Irvine. I don't think that Kimi is bought in to being a number two driver, and I don't think anyone's told him that that's the case. So there is a slight subtle difference here. For example, I think Massa might well have found himself with a random gearbox inspection on the grid had he qualified ahead of Sebastian Vettel in Monaco.
Might very well have. But it's, of course, as Stevens properly points out, a question which we can only answer by surmise and inference or deduction, not necessarily by getting the answer directly from the team.
Well, that's fine. Wild speculation is a thing I do.
We all do it well. That's why people come. Anyway, the upshot or the downshot or the bad news was, because Verstappen had kicked this all off trying to undercut Bottas because they'd been backed up by Kimi, the both of them got stuck in traffic. And in particular, Verstappen had a very costly and slow pit stop, which meant that the four-lap interval Ricciardo and Vettel were allowed saw Ricciardo perhaps making amends for last year's loss and getting properly ahead of his teammate and securing the podium spot for Red Bull, while Verstappen was like, they were just dumped getting through that traffic.
Now, that is a conspiracy theory. I like it. I love it. Absolutely love it. But hey, Matt, the safety car we were hoping for did come eventually, but even that didn't really have the effect we were hoping for.
Well, no, it didn't. The only real impact it had on the race was that, of course, Ericsson managed to take himself out while trying to unlap himself.
Oh, wait, hang on a minute. Let's be fair to Ericsson. We haven't decided that is in whose fault it.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This Ericsson versus the safety car. We could go either way. Let's be fair. True.
And Stroll wound up having to leave the race as he was unable to keep his brakes and tires up to temperature. And it was a bit of a sad moment on the radio as he was like, help me, please. I don't know what to do here.
Oh, Stroll.
It was he didn't really say that, but he was like, if I don't keep on braking like this, I lose all the temperature in my brakes. I lose all the temperature in my tires. And they said, well, if you keep on braking like this, your brakes will catch on fire and burn up. And eventually his brakes caught on fire and burned up, and he had to retire from the race.
Okay, remember that later on in the show, we do give an award for the best chat room comment, which is called Comment of the Week. Kirsten K says, Sparkles can't get off the fence. He's caught his pants, that's underwear to you, Matt, in barbed wire. Chris,
don't you mean his ripped jeans that he conveniently showed off on the live stream earlier?
Okay, that's really where the race was won and lost, Matt.
Yeah, it very much was. Now, I did see a point go by in the chat room that I'd like to address briefly, if I may, before we move on, pointing out that Vettel did some monster laps. Yes, he did 2 1:15s. However, after clearing Button, so did Kimi. Like, almost down to the 1,000th of a second, he ran the same lap times as Vettel on his new super softs that were supposed to be slower. So make of that what you will.
And we've barely mentioned him because he wasn't really a feature of the race. And if he wasn't the second place driver in the championship, I doubt he'd have got a mention at all today. But Lewis Hamilton, Chris, do you think he got the most he could have possibly done from 13th place?
I think he got more.
Yeah,
I really did not expect him to get a 7th place. I mean, a point or two was a realistic target, and they really did overshoot that. Played the strategy just perfectly.
And while we're talking to you, Chris, you're an autosport journalist, a legit young man touring the world, talking about motorsport, gone to Monaco. You go around doing amateur racing as well for autosport. How is your career going? Are you genuinely flying to the extent we think you are? Because frankly, me and Matt, having known you for a year and a bit, are baffled at your success.
Oh, you and me both. I think maybe, you know, looking outside of the tent, looking in, you know, they're two very different things. But yeah, I think my career is going pretty well at the moment. Like you say, I've just been to Monaco for the Formula E and then Paris as well. They were two amazing weeks. And yeah, doing the 750 Motor Club for Autosport, that's really, really fun. I've got that coming up in a couple of weeks again as well, so I should be back in the magazine. I'm actually going into the office at Autosport this week to do some work there, so I'm looking forward to that. It should be good.
I think, if nothing else, it's fair to say your foot's in the door, and that is possibly one of the very hardest things.
Yeah, I mean, I've spent, you know, 4 or 5 years trying to get my foot in the door, and now it's there, and I just need to actually barge it open and show the glorious world of journalism what I can do.
Did I hear you correctly say you were going into the office to do some work there, Stevens?
I know, I'm doing a 9-to-5.
Excellent. I was going to ask, did the loo need cleaning? Is that what you've been...
Oh, I haven't started yet. I go on Wednesday.
So you'll find out then what you have to do. I can't wait to hear, actually. I'm very excited for you. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, I have to say a bit of kudos to you, Mr. Stevens. You've impressed me since we've known each other. I think it's, what, a good couple of years now. Mate, it's getting better and better for you, but wait until you try commentary at some point, because I've got Daytona D-Max in a couple of weeks at Shennington.
No, I never. I could never do that. Although, actually, you've reminded me, because you've already mentioned it, Lean Angle Podcast, the bike show on Downforce Radio that I host as well. Please check that out.
Baha in the chat room says, at Matt Trumpets, excellent work, man. You are the podcast. Spanners would be completely lost without your insight. And I just noticed in our Skype chat where we put potential comments of the week that somebody, no names mentioned, has copied and pasted that. Matt, that's rather vain. You can't have that one win. Someone write a lovely comment about me and I'll nominate that. But hey, look, guys, I don't mind that at all. The whole thing I'm trying to deliver to you on Missed Apex Podcast is subject matter experts, and we give them the best platform possible to come and talk to you about F1. Every week I say to Matt, tell us how the race was won and lost. I say that to him because he knows. On Tech Time, we say to Summers, tell us how the F1 cars work. We get him to do that because he knows how the F1 cars work. Hey, we need F1 news. Chris Stevens comes on because that's what he does as an actual job. And now we also have Mr. Joe Saywood to tell us about life inside the Formula One paddock as well. So I absolutely don't mind playing second fiddle to such a fine cast and crew.
Is it the smell of your house burning down as distracting?
They don't know about that. That happened pre-show. As far as everybody knows, my house is fine. Hey, I've done this show with floods before. Okay, let's move on to whose fault is this? Whose fault is this? As you know, guys, if there was a fire in my actual house, we couldn't just rescue the pets and the children before my wife wanted to decide whose fault it was. We would need to establish blame before we could rescue ourselves and our valuables.
Can I just go ahead and blame Pirelli for everything?
Yeah, there's a good conspiracy theory going around that they're in the pockets of Ferrari because they keep tinkering with the tyre pressures and then mysteriously Mercedes lose performance. Although we will point out that correlation doesn't always equal causation. It was a bit strange for Pirelli to tweet that, a bit of a taunting tweet about Lewis Hamilton not doing well in qualifying. Did you catch that?
I did catch it. I didn't read it that way when I eventually saw the offending tweet, but that may just be me.
Fair enough, if you're going to be all sensible about it. Okay, whose fault is this? First up is Wöhrlein versus Button in one of the most bizarre crashes I've seen in Formula One. So I'm going to lay out this out. Whose fault is it? Pascal Wöhrlein is at fault for turning into a car that was alongside him and forcing him into the barrier. You have to be able to race. Chris Stevens, tell me why you disagree.
Are you actually trying to just cause an argument, or do you genuinely believe this?
No, I genuinely believe it.
It was so JB's fault. I mean,
why?
Because he stuck his nose in a half-hearted attempt at an overtake, which, fair enough, around Monaco, you have to take any 1% of a chance of an overtake you're going to get.
Exactly.
But it was 100% his fault.
His wheels were alongside the side pod. Now, according to the official rules of Formula One, Chris, that you don't care about, how far along do you have to be before the other person has to yield the corner?
A significant amount of your car, which Jensen did not.
Right, you're wrong on two counts. I'm so glad you've said that. The first count is a significant part of the car in the rules is very clearly clarified as any part of the front wing. And that rule only applies in any case before the braking zone on the straight. So, Chris Stevens, I ask you again, what is the rule in the corner? How much of the car has to be alongside before they have to yield it?
He dived into that corner.
Avoiding the question, Your Honour.
He's
avoided
on.
The question, Your Honour. May I approach the bar?
No.
I've already approached the bar.
But Chris, he's
so are spanners.
He's come alongside. He's come alongside him. He's in there. He's made that move. And Pascal has just turned in.
He hasn't made that move, though, at all, because he's just stuck his nose in a place it really does not belong. But Pascal's already beyond his turning, but he's got to turn into that corner at some point. What Jensen was trying to do there, he was trying to take advantage of the fact that the leaders were coming through, a bit like Max Verstappen did in 2015. And he tried to take advantage of it and hit him. It was his fault.
Well, the chat room wishes to get involved, and Evangelos Eteroklitos says, "It pains me to say it, Button's fault. With wide cars comes great responsibility."
I love it.
Okay, but Stevens, why are you so outraged about this? You are the one who's been saying to me all season, just let them race. Just let them race. So surely you don't agree with the penalty.
I'll tell you the reason I don't agree with the penalty is because it's a grid penalty that Jensen will never serve. It is the most pointless penalty ever given.
Okay, but that aside, do you agree that he should have been penalised for that move?
I think so. I think it was slightly reckless of Jensen, a bit out of character for him. He was very much to blame for it. It's not one of those, you know, 50-50, 40-60 manoeuvres.
You've done a right U-turn here. Here's what the steward said. Having reviewed all the angles of video, the stewards concluded that Wehrlein was on the racing line and that the move Button made was unlikely to result in a clean pass. The stewards did not consider the consequences of the collision. Good, I'm happy with that, but they're lying. Because you have to, that was dramatic, which resulted from Button trying to brake at the last moment and Wehrlein's interlocked wheel causing the car to turn onto its side. Firstly, I don't know why they bothered mentioning that. Everyone is affected by seeing a car flipped over. It's a human reaction. You just can't help it. But they've now said, they've set a precedent for the rest of the season that unless it's likely to make a clean overtake, you will get penalised, which means that you can't do anything because the driver in front just has to close the door on the apex, and that by definition means they're going to get a penalty.
I disagree with that, because up until, you know, well, not even up until this point, the stewards have been very, very good and clever with their decisions so far. They've not been penalizing, you know, those 50-50, 40-60 incidents that are just racing incidents, just what happens when you go racing. What Jensen did was, maybe reckless is a bit too harsh of a word, but it was very, very silly and unnecessary. And I can understand his frustration because he shouldn't have been in that position. You know, Pascal was released unsafely into his path and the penalty that Sauber got didn't make a damn bit of difference. So I can understand why he took that, you know, half chance he got, but it was definitely a very silly move that he made.
Right. So this one is a very tough one for me. Because I sort of want to hold my fire because I feel like we should talk about that later on. But I kind of want to blame the stewards for not making Wehrlein yield the place to Button way back when he first illegally took it from him.
That's very true.
If we are going to limit ourselves to the actual interaction on track in terms of assigning blame, this is tough. Because now I either have to agree with Spanners or with Stevens. Neither of which neither of which pleases me, but nevertheless, I'm going to have to say it's 100% completely all the way, totally 100 million percent Jensen Button's fault for the following reason. The only way that overtake would have succeeded was if Wehrlein had simply turned left and driven nose first into the barrier. There was no way he was ever going to get round there without contact. And I think that was the point that the stewards were making. Not that you can't go for a low probability maneuver, but it has to be greater than 0%, which is what that particular move have. And we know this because of Button's own comments afterwards. He's like, "Oh yeah, I was alongside him. And then I realized he didn't see me." Well, guess what? If if the move requires the other driver to see you, you've already done a bad thing.
I don't know. I tell you what,
that's my general opinion.
I don't think this is as cut and dry as Chris's expression of dread and hatred towards me is making out. But the chat room seems pretty split, to be honest, if you look at it. Corky says, Spanners, I agree with you. He left the door open for Button to go through. Othnell saying, well then, Spanners, then Seb should have been penalised for the contact in Spain. And a big precedent has been set for running the car out wide. It seems to me now, in the rules, the stewards have basically said, you are allowed to run a car out wide on the exit of a corner.
You are if you are far along, if you are far alongside enough. You have a clean pass. And I can point to the same race, Sergio Perez, Stoffel Van Dorn, later on, where the exact thing happened. Perez ran Van Dorn wide, getting around Sandevoet, into the wall goes Van Dorn. Nothing. Wasn't even investigated. So I think you're a tempest in a teacup here, Mr. Spanners. But I do want to make the point that the reason that door was open, and Chris had mentioned it, but I wish to re-mention it all over again, was that he had been letting one of the Ferraris by him, and Button was attempting to take advantage of that.
I think the other reason that that Stoffel incident didn't get investigated as well is because it was partly to do with the track breaking up as well. If you went on the outside there, you were pretty much going to end up in the wall.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we'll get to that in a minute, because Perez gets his own little section today.
It is Button's fault with regards to the maneuver, because if that was in a tin top race, the person going up the inside would definitely get a penalty. Definitely get a penalty. So I'm agreeing with the stewards in the respect of what Button did in terms of the fact that his car was not even halfway alongside their lines, because I've just had a look back at the footage. But yes, I'm in agreement with Mr. Trumpets on the fact that Verline should have got a penalty for having an unsafe release into Button's path.
Matt, so most people are agreeing with me then, basically, is what I'm hearing. Oh, come on. I just want to be in an echo chamber surrounded by yes men. Is that too much to ask? Yeah. So
mine's a part yes and a part no. So I'm in agreement with Matt pretty much all the way in terms of the stewards not doing their job properly, but also Button. And now, if anyone might remember that the fact he was quoted as saying he's done quite a few rookie mistakes, and this comes from not having actually got into the actual car itself, doing a lot of work on the sim, it's not going to be the same as actually driving the car and finding out the limits.
Oh my goodness. When he, in practice, couldn't find the DRS bleep off button, and he's asking over the radio, how do I turn this beep off? You know, the answer came over the radio pretty much, well, we told everyone in Bahrain, so just do that. Do what we said.
So there you go. It's also the fact that he hasn't been in the current car. That's the biggest problem he's had. He's been spending too much time getting disqualified for going too fast in triathlons, let alone getting behind the wheel of a car when he knew that he was going to be replacing Fernando.
All right, let's get a quick one out of the way then, Matt. Whose fault is it between Ericsson and the safety car? Ericsson had the outside line, but did the safety car force him wide effectively? Did he leave him enough room?
Yeah, you know, as fun as it would be to blame the safety car for that, I'm just going to have to go for Ericsson, because how could you not?
It's the track's fault.
Boo.
The tarmac's fault. It's the tarmac's fault for breaking up. Actually, while we're talking about it, why did the tarmac break up? Because the cars are too quick. They've got too much downforce. It's all the car's fault.
So you can have too much downforce.
Oh.
Ooh. So really what you're saying, Chris Stevens, is that it's all Bernie Eccleston's fault, because we know these regulations came from him.
Anyway, it was pretty embarrassing. And Mr. Joe Saywood did say, when he came on last week with Inside F1 with Joe Saywood, he defended Marcus Ericsson a lot. So, you know, I don't want to shoo off our new friend, but it's going to come up. I'll tell you that much. Matt, gone the two Perez incidents. Which one do you want to address? Pick one of the two.
Well, I think Perez Van Dorn would be the more difficult to judge one. So let's start with that, shall
we? Okay. You judge it.
I judge it. That was Van Dorn's fault. He should never let Perez get up the inside that way going into Sandevoet.
But wasn't that fairly similar to what Bianchi did on Kobayashi?
At Raskas, you mean?
Oh, that was at Raskas, was it? But it felt like a similar maneuver where everyone had kind of gone, yeah, Bianchi's a genius for basically punting Kobayashi twice. There wasn't enough room to do the move, but he did it. But this way round, people are saying, you know, Perez shouldn't have done it.
Nah, there was plenty of room for him to be where he was, but the inevitable result of him being there was that Van Dorn was going to get out on the marbles and into the wall. which of course negated the whole give him the new floor strategy that McLaren employed, and actually made it a threefer for them in terms of not finishing a single car this weekend, which is pretty good for a Formula One weekend.
So thanks very much, guys, for helping me be the petty person who won't allow a racing incident to go unjudged. If you enjoy this podcast and you'd like to support the show, we have two ways in which you can do this. A, tell everyone. Tell them Missed Apex podcast adds to your F1 fandom and enjoyment of Formula One. Or two, you can give us real money. If you support content creators on Patreon, then please consider supporting us. Go to missedapexpodcast.com and click Patreon on the menu tab. Follow me at SpannersReady on Twitter as well. That shows support. And stay tuned on our feed for Tech Time, Wafflecast, and the Canadian GP review, all coming up in the next couple of weeks. Matt, where can people find you online as well?
They can find me at MattPT55 on the Twitters. And that is the best place to look for me. Just ask my wife.
All right, let's roll through some any other business. Alex, we've not really touched on Button's return that much, but from a performance point of view, he came on the radio and just said, this is painful. I think he was talking about following Pascal Wehrlein Sauber, but also he could just have been talking about the whole return in general.
I think it was also the fact that he qualified the car ninth and still ended up with a 15-place grid penalty thanks to an MGU issue, which then could have possibly put him back into Nice with the floor being replaced as well. So, but I think the highlight for me was when he had the phone call from Fernando Alonso being patched in through from Indianapolis, which I have to say was one of the best Button banter I've heard in quite a while when Fernando said, yeah, good luck, mate. Look after my car. And then he literally goes, does something, says that he might do something interesting with the seat before they went green. But yeah, it was a very, very painful experience, I think. And it showed by the comments that he was making post-race saying, I think it was even post-qualifying saying, this is my last qualifying session, and meaning every single syllable of it.
Yeah, I think there was no doubt this time. Sparkles, a great performance by Carlos Sainz, deserved every single point this weekend.
Yeah, Toro Rosso was working really well in practice, and Carlos did an amazing lap, as he usually always does. It was an incredible performance by him. Not much to say on that, to be honest.
But his performance really was the difference of why Lewis Hamilton did as well as he could today. You know, that was not that he failed to get to Carlos Sainz. Carlos Sainz earned sixth place on track.
Oh, 100%, yeah.
Drumpits, bad day for the Force Indias that we normally rant and rave about, but a good day for your American buddies.
That's right. They had their very first double points finish, and that included a puncture for Magnussen on the edge of the manhole cover that was becoming exposed because the cars were literally ripping the pavement from the ground. They're so powerful. Sorry, I got a little carried away there.
Oh, you sounded all newscasty and American. That's why you're here.
Indeed. No, but it was Perez just had a bonkers day. I mean, Ocon was out early. He got a puncture and was shuffled to the back, and he was never going to do anything for them. But Perez was in a proper points position. He got a pair of ultra soft tires on late thanks to the safety car, and he literally made a charge, which only ended when he charged directly into Danny Kvyat's car, who was actually not having a bad race himself until, of course, he got taken out by Perez.
No, and especially when they've been started to support breast cancer with the pink ribbons on the top part of the nose cones as well. I think it's just shown that with having great success at other tracks that both Ocon and Perez have had, it's Monaco's probably been a big blip, and especially with the type of track that Monaco is as well, it makes for a very interesting dynamic for Force India, but also they've still got more tracks where they're going to flourish as opposed to somewhere like Monaco, where it is tough to make up places, especially with Ocon having that massive hit, which damaged the right front suspension on his car as well.
Definitely, it was a bit of a blip from Force India. That's definitely the right word for it. I will say, though, I expect him to go really strong around Canada because that is a track that should suit their car pretty well. So definitely double points. That's going to be back in the mix pretty quickly.
And Matt, what a relief for Honda that they didn't have a week of providing Alonso with a terrible Honda engine that let him down.
Indeed, indeed. Alonso spent a month in the U.S. testing, driving, and getting so good that he ran at the front of the race for almost all of it. And at the very end, and I will just simply say, you know, unless the only reason you watched this race was because you wanted to see what Fernando Alonso did, it was way more exciting than Monaco this year. I'm just going to go there. At the end, he's making his way through the field. It looks like he might be able to vie for the lead before the end. And then you hear smoke coming out the back and you're thinking, no, really? But to be fair, two or three other Honda engines also let go during the race. So you kind of had the feeling it might be coming.
Yeah, one of which was his teammate, Ryan Hunter-Reay. His engine actually popped first out of the Hondas, then Charlie Kimball's as well. Yes. They both had engine issues, so at least it didn't just happen to Fernando.
He had company with his misery.
Having seen the clips on social media from the Indy 500, I think I will definitely give a similar event a go the next time it comes up. It did look pretty exciting, and I would have liked to have seen how the tactical battle with Sato and stuff, and how all that drafting, you know, I know that is real racing. I just can't imagine it in my head because I've not given it a proper go, but I will.
Definitely, you know, IndyCar is definitely, you know, something that you would watch over Monaco as a TV spectacle. I don't think the two are quite comparable, but I do definitely think that Fernando Alonso will be back next year, maybe even, you know, ditch F1 to do a full season of IndyCar wouldn't surprise me. And one thing I noticed as well in the weekend is during that race is I've very, very rarely seen the entirety of the motorsport community just join together in this one moment, this one race to watch Fernando Alonso. Really, it's something to see.
Fair enough. All right, let's bring this home with the podium. And what a podium it was! I'm joking. That was devastatingly dire. I can't, you know, I'm not a Rosberg fan. I'm not trying to hate on him, but just maybe the lad's not like naturally a presenter, Matt.
Sorry, you caught me by surprise. I was thinking it was fantastic. Sato won. Honda actually did get the victory anyway, despite the blown up engines.
This podium, and I'm afraid.
Could you even call it a podium? I mean, what was that exactly?
It was weird. It was weird and it was cringy, and fair play to Rosberg. I think that's about as well as he could have delivered it. I think he was relying heavily on the earpiece in his ear. But okay, fine. Invite the Formula One champion to come and speak. But yeah, not in a hurry to rebook him.
They were chasing drivers around. Nobody knew where to go. I mean, it's like the person in charge had a sudden attack of food poisoning.
Yeah,
because there was nobody left to tell them what to do.
Ricciardo got there like a good minute first, and he stood next to Rosberg trying to chat with him. And Nico's like, "No, this is not the procedure. We will wait for Sebastian to arrive." And then they just stood there, and then the camera flicked away and waited for Vettel to get there. Yeah, that didn't really go well at all. But hey. Let's nominate our thing of the weekend, Goldie. Who's your thing of the weekend, the whole weekend?
I think Raikkonen's attitude after getting second in the race just literally was not interested in speaking to anybody. If you saw the actual handshakes between himself and Vettel and Arriva Benny, it was not well-mannered in any way, shape or form, because the look on his face, I think the 1,000-yard stare and a bit of thunder for good measure from the Iceman himself.
I think for the leaders that there are too many mistakes for one of them to be my thing of the weekend. So for me, it's got to be, once again, Carlos Sainz.
No, that's a great shout. That's a great shout. Trumpets, who's your thing of the weekend?
Well, it was going to be Carlos Sainz until Stephen stole it from me. So instead, I will go with the Haas team double point finish, first time in their very short career.
Yeah, it's a good effort. It's a good effort. I will give it to Jenson Button, somebody who I am not generally a fan of and I don't go mad for, but I think he showed some guts. At least he did something. He didn't just give up and follow the procession home. So he's my thing of the weekend, Jenson Button. But that's not the one people are interested in. People are interested in the negative one. Matt, so that Chris doesn't steal yours, who missed the apex for you? Hang on, I think I've got a bumper.
Oh! Oh no, you missed the apex.
Right, so I'm actually going to sneak in three, because I'm tempted to say the whole of Formula One when compared to the Indy 500. But that's not really fair, because we're talking in the Formula One universe, so I won't go there. You could say Pirelli, and you wouldn't be wrong, but I'm going to go with the stewards for the following reason.
Because they gave Button a penalty. Yes,
nope,
I agree.
Because they issued Wehrlein only a five-second stop, only a five-second time penalty in a race with a single pit stop, and doomed Button to trail behind him for the other 77 laps. Now, look, if you miss a chicane and you gain an advantage, what do you have to do?
Give it up,
baby. They get the position back. They should have demanded that Wehrlein give the position to Button, and then, well, you know, then we wouldn't have had the safety car for that reason, but probably for some other fun reason instead.
Goldie, who missed the apex, buddy?
Tough one on this. I think it's probably Pascal Wehrlein trying to get out of his car when he actually ended up sideways. That was the who missed the apex this week when his engineer went, "You're right, Pascal." He said, "Yes, I would be if I could actually get out."
I feel bad. And related to that, missed the apex, everybody who, when they wanted to make a joke about that incident later, had to caveat it with saying, "I'm just glad you're all right, Pascal." Yes, all right. We know he's all right. You're allowed to have a joke about it now. That was a insanely comical, you know, in the context of him being okay. And I am just glad he's all right. Damn, I just did it too. Never mind. Chris Stevens, who missed the apex for you?
Force India. Massive missed opportunity. A good point all there.
And can you guess who my missed apex award is going to go to, Chris?
You're not going to give it to Lewis, are you?
One of the drivers crashed, overtaking the safety car, unlapping himself from this safety car. You ridiculous! Why? It wasn't even in the race.
To Ericsson. If you're going to give it to us, at least give it to Van Dorn as well, because they both did literally miss the apex.
But it's like, okay, guys, you can overtake the safety car so we can get started. Somebody crashed overtaking the safety car. Who was it? Right. Okay. Carry on. What comments, what awards have we not yet given out? Oh, this one.
Daddy, I want a pony. And I want it now.
Matt, you always do the best pony awards. Who gets it for you?
Oh, it's so hard. Because it's not really technically a pony, but I have to go with Stroll on the radio during the safety
no,
car.
No, that's valid. No, that is fine.
I want a pony. It's more like, Daddy, would you come please tie my shoes and pull my pants up for me?
Honestly, at Williams, they should just give him a whistle and say, look, if anything F1 related happens, blow this whistle and Anthony Davidson will come and help you. That's what they should do. Like, that is an insane amount of advice to be asking for under the safety car. Like, what do you reckon? Does he just not take it in? Or surely even rookies know that stuff.
He's 18. He's skipped GP, or I guess now F2 entirely. And look, you know, he might wind up being a decent driver, but currently he's just entirely out of his depth. And I think he's overwhelmed. And the pressure at that level, I mean, you know, I'm as old as I am, and I'll be honest, like, I don't know how those guys put up with that pressure week in and week out. You just have to be really, really strong. And at age 18, very, very few people are that strong.
Any ponies from Goldie and Stevens?
Yes, there is. Max Verstappen's foul-mouthed tirade after his pit stop.
He wasn't
going
happy.
Down the Lowe's hairpin. After his pit stop, he had a few choice words, which were bleeped out, and the words followed by disaster in quick succession. So, yeah, Max was not a happy Max.
There was a similar one for Sergio Perez as well. After he clanged with Kvyat, he said, "Don't talk to me while I'm trying to drive."
That kind of reminds me of Bottas saying, "Right, for the next few laps, I want less talking at Sochi."
Well, Lewis has done it plenty of times. Nürburgring in 2011 being the standout one for me.
And I don't have a pony award this weekend because I think they all behaved impeccably, except for Kimi Raikkonen with that explosive display of emotions in the post-race interviews.
Yes, well, I obviously wanted to win the race, but I did not win the race.
Unbelievable. Shocking. Kids, listen to that. Let's move on to comment of the week.
Comment of the week.
And they've been keeping me busy. It's very hard to monitor the chat room and actually do anything else on this show. But I have been trying, and I have a few. Patrick Green in with a shout. I think Pirelli should have brought a new compound called, quote, "How is this not soft enough, you idiot?" I think we also had one, and I think Evangelos Eteroklitos, it pains me to say it, Button's fault. With wide cars comes great responsibility. I blew that entirely. And also in the same commenter, when we were playing Who's to Blame, he said, "Let's blame Earth's atmosphere for not being thick enough." And finally, Brian Brink suggesting that we rename the safety car the unsafety car. And at the end of it all, I'm going to say, it's Evangelos Eteroklitos. It pains me to say it, Button's fault. With wide cars comes great responsibility. Has to be comment of the week.
Comment of the week.
Thanks very much, guys. We're going to get out of here. Please consider supporting the show and following it, all of us at Spanners Ready, at MattPT55. Goldie, I forgot yours. Tell me it.
Alex underscore G 1977. You see, you got it bad enough with Vatom. I can't even remember my own Twitter handle now.
At Chris Stevens underscore Journo is where you'll find him.
At C Stevens underscore Jano.
Whatever, it's got an underscore, it's pointless. Until next time. In fact, when I say until next time, we're handing over the reins to Chris Stevens next Sunday. He's going to deliver you some F1 news because I'm on holiday in Lanzarote, innit? Sunning up, but I will be listening into the live stream if I'm allowed. He'll be joined by MattPT55 and some of our other fine panelists to take you through the pre-race on Sunday. On Thursday, you can catch up with me and Matt on sportsbookreview.com. We're going to lay out the odds and tell you where you should be putting your money for the Canadian Grand Prix. And as well, coming up midweek around Thursday is going to be Inside F1 with Joe Saywood. So please stay tuned to the feed and remember that wounds heal, chicks dig scars, and glory lasts forever. This was Missed Apex. Oh, wow. Chat room was off the hook, Matt. How did you keep up with any of that?
It was actually very, very difficult to deliver all that content and try and keep up. I just scanned as quickly as I could when I had time.
Well, according to the chat room, you are the podcast. Don't know how Spanners would manage without you. Oh, I'm just basking in your reflected glory, trumpets. Yeah, don't worry about me. You know, I'm just jamming at all these buttons that basically do nothing, running a live stream from my shed. No, it's fine. Oh, no, Matt does everything with his snark, with his American snark that you value so highly. Chat room.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc. Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.